This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 4 minutes after 1 o'clock. This is Nation Radio. We're here until 2, and then Jungle Jim Hunter on the radio between 2 and 4. We present Oilers stories of yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and major hockey news around the world. And the big news today, of course, for Edmonton Oilers fans is talk of the win over Calgary and the Taylor Hall injury. In this hour, we're going to have Tom Rennie and some of his comments about the injury and about the game last night and some improved play for the Oilers in terms of cutting down scoring chances, especially in the third period. They've done a really good job the last couple of games, and I know it was a tired Calgary team and a Columbus club, but you know, small victories, you know, big steps, all that stuff, that's coming up and more. And also later on this hour, Mike Krushelnicki, former Edmonton Oiler, will talk about the biggest trade in NHL history. He was a part of that, and about a splendid career in Edmonton. You couldn't do better than Mike Krushelnicki did. I think it was 3 cups in 4 years before he was on his way to the Los Angeles Kings. We begin this hour with Thomas Drantz from Canucks Army. Thomas, this afternoon, how are you?
I'm well, Alan. How you doing?
Good.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patty's Day to you, too. Are you wearing green right now?
You know, I am wearing green right now, and that's because I think my score-tied Irishness is 1/8. My great-grandmother was Irish, so there we go. Had to wear some green, had to drink some beer.
I'm 1/4 Irish, half Dutch, and 1/4, I think, English. So it's I think I'd be a Heinz 57. You know,
you're a mutt like me, Alan.
All right, let's talk about those mutts in Vancouver. Since the deadline, they've just been okay since the deadline, Thomas. Is the problem offense?
You know, the problem's defense, definitely defense. They've given up you know, odd man rushes by the dozen. What's interesting, though, is that their possession numbers are way up, right? They've been a much better possession team since the deadline. The acquisition of Sammy Paulson, in particular, I think, has helped to help them drive play. They're just not getting the results right now, and I think, you know, there was a Vancouver beat writer heard Vancouver player telling one of the Phoenix Coyotes after their 5-4 loss on Thursday night in Vancouver, that, you know, they hadn't cared for months. So I think motivation is a big issue for this team right now. I think they've got an 11-point lead on the next closest Northwest Division opponent, which is the Colorado Avalanche. They also have 3 games in hand. And they have, you know, a sizable lead, almost a 10-point lead over the third-place Dallas Stars. So they're feeling pretty they've got an 82% chance of finishing second and an 18% chance of finishing first, and they're not going anywhere else. And I think when you're playing bubble team after bubble team, and you know that your place in the dance is pretty much set, I think it's tough to play the full 60 minutes. And the team's, you know, shown that. They haven't been playing very well. So we'll see tonight against Columbus. Good opportunity to turn it around. And then, of course, they play in Chicago on Wednesday, and they always get it up to play the Blackhawks. So I'm thinking we'll see a couple wins over the course of the next week, and sort of the jitters in Vancouver will subside.
You make a great point. If you look at a team like the or players like the Sedins, these are guys who played a lot of hockey the last 2 seasons.
Absolutely.
You know, so maybe it's not such a bad thing that they're, you know, not a strong ebb, as long as they can begin to turn it on, right, as they get closer to the playoffs.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the question. They all talk about, the team to themselves talk about how they can't just flip an on switch. That's just not how it works for them. They don't believe that that sort of exists. But obviously, at the same time, it's a different game once you get to the playoffs. And there's guys like Max LaPierre, right, who, he started out the season strong, has sort of become a little bit more of an invisible presence. But you just know that he's going to be, you know, throwing his body around and throwing his weight around come playoff time. And so I think there's definitely an element to which they're just sort of biding their time, twiddling their thumbs. And I think the fans are getting frustrated mostly because it's just not fun to watch.
Where does Paulson fit into the construct? Is he ahead or behind Malhotra?
Well, Malhotra's missed. He's going to miss again. He's going to miss his second game in a row. It was personal issues. They gave him the day off on Thursday. He won't play again today either. And I thought personally that the Canucks missed him on the penalty kill. Shorthanded, he leads the team in shorthanded ice time, and his ability to win faceoffs in the defensive end is hugely important to the team. They gave away 2 power play goals against the league's worst power play in the Phoenix Coyotes. So I thought his presence was missed on Thursday, and he won't play again tonight. As you know, we've seen that he was taking well over 50% of the team's defensive zone faceoffs up until the trade deadline. And since then, Paulson's been taking more defensive zone faceoffs than Malhotra has. So it seems like he's been demoted. He's no longer the first line checking center. He's the second line. He's the second checking line center. And, you know, that's still going to be valuable. He's obviously most important to the team on the penalty kill. So we'll see. But I think Paulson is, for now, the team's true first shutdown center.
So is he is Paulson doing the defensive zone starts more often than Malhotra right now?
Yeah, I think the percentage is like 55% of all defensive zone starts since the deadline have been taken by Paulson.
Wow.
And 38% by Malhotra.
Okay.
Leaving 7% for Kessler and the Sedins. And it's not a coincidence that Kessler's been on a scoring tear since they traded Hodgson. Vigneault was protecting Hodgson's minutes. Hodgson was started something like 80% of his shifts in the offensive end in 2012 up until the deadline. So Kessler was sort of this team's second option in the defensive end and was playing quite difficult minutes. Now they're able to shelter Kessler a bit and deploy him against team's third pairings, and it's he's responded. I think he has 5 goals since the deadline, so that's not really a surprise to teams, to the people who are paying attention to the way the Canucks deploy.
Cassian has looked good to me, and the kid that the Vancouver traded away hasn't done a thing since he got to Buffalo.
No,
that trade looks pretty good right now.
Yeah, it does. Hodgson's going to be a star, and his on-ice shooting percentage is 4.5% in Buffalo. The fact that he hasn't produced isn't a reason to be feeling good about the trade. I think the reason to be feeling good about the trade for the Canucks is that in the short term, their possession numbers have gone up. Hodgson's controlling like 38% of events at even strength in Buffalo. And that's when he's playing major minutes, right? His minutes were hugely limited and sort of led directly to him requesting a move out of Vancouver. And it turns out that head coach Alain Vigneault was right to use Hodgson the way he was using him. Hodgson's just not ready to help you win games in a top six role in the NHL yet. He'll get there. He'll get there. I'm sure in a couple seasons, we'll see a string of highlight reel Hodgson goals and I'll yell at my television. But in the meantime, the Canucks are a better possession team with Sammy Paulson as their third line pivot. And, I think the trade's looking pretty good. Cassian's been good. Cassian's not so good yet in the defensive end. He's had some issues with zone exits, and that has resulted in the first Buffalo goal a couple weeks back, resulted in Kyle Wellwood's goal against the Jets. I think sort of over a long enough period of time, if he doesn't tighten that up, he's going to find himself in Alain Vigneault's doghouse. But, you know, for now, he's played a physical game. He hits everything. He had his first fight last weekend, lost to Brad Staubitz, but, you know, threw his weight around, and, you know, he's been a good fit.
I look at the Vancouver Canucks right now and what they did at the deadline, and to me they added, you know, defensively, I thought they did a really good job at the deadline, maybe mm-hmm. suffered a little bit offensively, but they look so buttoned down defensively right now, and I know that they're not acting like it, but the two things that I like about them as a playoff team this year is, if anything, they've got better depth up the middle in terms of center and defense now, and obviously in goal, when they probably have the best depth in goal in the National Hockey League. They seem to me to be a team that is ideally suited to win a 2-1 or a 3-2 hockey game, and they seem to have enough depth pretty much everywhere to overcome a lot of injuries like they had last year. Would you agree with that?
Sorry, Alan?
Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. I think, yeah, they're 9 deep. Once Ballard gets back, and, you know, Ballard, of course, suffered a concussion, but it was a pretty suspicious concussion in that he was pulled out of a game against Minnesota that was exactly 10 games before the deadline, right? So it was exactly the length of time he had to be out to qualify to go on a long-term injury reserve and allow the Canucks to acquire Paulson. So Ballard skated today, had a rigorous workout. Most people expect that he'll be back for the postseason. And once he is, they'll basically go 9 deep on the blue line. And that's, that would make a guy like Chris Tanev, who I think is capable of playing top 4 minutes, their 7th defenseman. And it would make Keith Ballard, who I think is a top 4 D-man also on most teams, that would make him, you know, the 6th guy. So, yeah, I think they're extremely deep along the blue line. That said, they were extremely deep along the blue line last year. And it didn't matter once Ham Hughes and Rome were eliminated in the finals, so or were unable to play in the finals. In terms of depth, what I really like is they've right now their third line, the wingers on their third line, they've demoted Alex Burrows onto the third line, and he's played great. And Yannick Hansen, I think both of those guys can contribute in the top six if need be. And that's going to be, I think, something that can make a difference, especially once if the team gets ravaged by the injury bug in the postseason. And then there's guys like Reinprecht and Byron Bitts, who are playing in the, on the Chicago Wolves right now. I'm going to cover that game tomorrow, so I'll hopefully get a chance to chat with them. And yeah, they'll, I mean, Reinprecht can absolutely be a competent, you know, third line presence if need be. You know, especially over a small sample in the postseason. He's not even on the roster right now. I'd say he's the 14th or 15th forward.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think in terms of their depth, I think they're well positioned to overcome injuries in the postseason. And if they continue to get goaltending like they got through January and February, you know, I think they'll be a, I think they'll be a really tough out.
A little tip for you: the Chicago Wolves head coach is a great quote. If you want to get him a few quotes on the record, he's a great quote.
Yeah, I'll definitely try to do that.
Bobby Luongo is. We've talked about this before. We're both fans of this guy.
Yeah.
I honestly don't understand what goes on as far as the press are concerned with regard to him. But a question that I do have is, if they go through the playoffs this year, how long a leash does he have before that terrific backup gets an opportunity?
You know, I think he's got a much shorter leash than he had last year. Last year, it took 3 goals for him to get pulled in game 6. I think it'll be 2 in a similar situation this year. And I think that probably makes sense. I'd love to see Schneider get a fair bit of action down the stretch here, and I wouldn't mind seeing Vigneault go with whichever goalie's playing better down over the next 12 games for game 1 of the postseason. You know, it'll probably be Luongo. Luongo's the guy, but Schneider's been better this year in terms of his quality start percentage, and that matters to me. I think he's got a 63-64% quality start percentage, and Luongo's hovering just above 50%.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been the more consistent. He's given the Canucks a consistent chance to win. I don't even think he's lost a game since December. So Schneider's been out of this world. And, you know, Luongo has the better even strength save percentage, and that's sort of a more skill stat than overall save percentage, right? Because penalty kill save percentage is so dependent on the system your team plays. So there's certainly an argument for Luongo to continue to be the guy. But I'd like to see them sort of be given almost an equal shot over the next month. And then, you know, I think you go with Luongo on game 1 of the postseason. But I think from there, you go with whomever's playing better. And frankly, up to this point in the season, Corey Schneider has been the Canucks' best goaltender.
Final question is with regard to David Booth. I liked the trade when it happened. It took mm-hmm. him a while to get rolling. How do you see, is he playing better, and how do you see him being a part of that, I guess, second line?
Yeah, I think David Booth's been an awesome, awesome addition for the Canucks. He's got that sort of, he'll put his head down and just barrel to the net. Doesn't always work out, but it's always exciting. And in terms of his two-way numbers, in terms of his adjusted Corsi differential, chance differential, you name it, by any metric, he's basically the Canucks' best play-driving winger. When you look at how they got manhandled 5-on-5 by the Bruins and by the Chicago Blackhawks in the first round, too, you know, they really got bailed out a little bit by their power play and by Ryan Kessler. It's nice to have sort of that other two-way presence. He's David Booth has become, for the Canucks, he's like the poor man's Marian Hossa. And that's a pretty good addition to
yeah.
have. And on top of it, he specializes around the net, right? He's got nice touch and scores those sort of finicky garbage goals that I think can make a huge difference in the postseason. So David Booth's been great, and I definitely expect him to be a major part of any deep run the Canucks are able to make this spring.
Thomas, where can we read you?
You can read me at Canucks Army. I'll be in the province on Monday. And then I also blog over at Pass It to Bullis, which is the Vancouver Sun. And I've dropped my goofy Artem Chabarov handle on Twitter, so you can follow me at Thomas Drance.
Oh, okay. So no more Artem, because I always got confused by that. I did. I'm old. You cannot confuse old people. We don't understand.
It was just time.
I linked to some crazy video of you today. I think it's your homepage for your business or something, because you confuse me, man.
Right. I apologize. But yeah, you know, I've consolidated everything. I'm trying to make it a lot simpler for the old folks like you, Alan.
All right. Give me your PIN number. I need $100 here. So I'm only teasing. Thomas, thanks, man.
All the best. Cheers.
Okay. That's Thomas Drance from Canucks Army. Interesting guy. Great insight. And we thank him very much for his time. On the way, Mike Krushelnicki, former Edmonton Oiler. We'll talk about his various charity works, what he wants to did a little bit of coaching after he finished his career. We'll talk about that and the most famous trade in NHL history. And he was a part of that. It's on the way. This is Nation Radio brought to you by Edmonton Motors.